Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Believe You Me podcast. Do not adjust your screens. Anthony Smith has not gone through a Polish transformation. We are joined by the one and only Jan, Mr. Polish Power Blachowicz. What's going on, brother? How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And remember, legendary Polish power.
Let's go. Oh, the legendary Polish power.
Yes,
my
this is correct.
Apologies. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry.
Mate, since we spoke last time, a lot has gone on in your life and in the light heavyweight division. You lost the belt. You won the belt. You knocked out Reyes. You defended against Izzy. You lost to Glover. Then you fought for the belt again. It went to a draw. Jamal Hill becomes the... Jiri vacates the belt. Jamal becomes the champion. Jamal vacates the belt. And now you're fighting Alex Pereira in what is being called or rumored to be kind of a number one contender matchup, right?
Yeah. This is the number one contender match. Nothing changed till this moment. We will see. Maybe tomorrow or you know, next week they change something. But for now, nothing changed. It's a normal fight. Who's going to win? I believe that's going to be me. So next fight will be for the title. Yeah, I mean, but like you said, a lot of weird things happen in our division. But, you know, show must go on. So it is what it is.
The show must go on, correct. We'll get to the fight with Alex in a little bit, but what did you think about Jiri vacating the belt? And what's your thoughts on Jamal doing the same thing? Because I think, you know, listen, we all know it's a very honorable thing. Jiri wanted the division to move along. That's great. That's good. And I think Jamal, because that's how we got the title fight, he feels he should do the same thing. And I respect that as a fighter, but if I was managing them, I'd be like, what are you doing? This is the light heavyweight championship of the world. You don't fucking walk away from this.
Yeah, it's, you know, always it's two sides, you know. I'm also a man of honor, so maybe I will, you know, also leave the belt if it's a situation like this. But of course, my manager will tell me, don't do it. Wait, if they will take it, then you will give it. Now, don't give it like you know, like a present.
Yeah.
But I respect this what they do does because, you know, they don't hold the division. So, like we say, show must go on. So, yeah, I wish them a fast recovery. I think it's already good. So now we're waiting for Jamal. But anyway, it is what it is. So, anyway, after my fight and then Alex... Next fight, we're going to have a new champion in 205.
Yeah, so you think if you beat Alex next week, do you think you'll get a shot against Jiri?
We will see. I think that it's only one way to do it because he was a champion. He left the belt. So, when I beat Alex, my next fight will be against Jiri somewhere in Europe. That will be amazing. Yeah. Yeah, but now I focus about the Alex. You know, I don't want to go so far
because
I need to focus about Pereira right now.
Absolutely. And Pereira's, as we know, incredibly dangerous on the feet. But we saw Adesanya was able to take him down. He was able to out-grapple him a little bit. I'm assuming, and you don't want to give too much away, but I think anyone who knows anything about mixed martial arts probably thinks you're going to come in and grapple a little bit.
For sure, but you know how it is. I am a stand-up fighter, and I like fighting stand-up. So I have to check my stand-up against someone like Pereira. But if I don't feel good, if I take some punches, for sure I'm gonna use wrestling and take him down. Because also, I am not stupid. I know how to what I have to do to win this fight, and I use all my tools to do it.
Yeah,
but I want to. But I will not go for takedown from locker room, no. I will stand in the middle of the cage and punch with him, you know. And if something goes wrong, then I will start wrestling, but not earlier, you know.
Again, if I'm your manager, I'm going crazy. You're walking away from belts. You're choosing to stand with a dangerous kickboxer when you're a great wrestler. I'm like, these knuckleheads, what are you doing?
I live my life how I like, you know. And that's it, you know. I have to check my stand up against him, you know.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
But if I'm gonna have opportunity to take him down, I will do it. It's not a secret, and they knew that they gonna be ready for that. So, and like I am ready for his stand up. So I think that's gonna be great matchup, great fight to watch. Two more weeks.
Yeah, everybody will know
everything.
Well, you are probably two of the hardest hitters in the light heavyweight division. Of course, he's making his debut. How do you think he's going to fare at 205? Because at middleweight, he was very big and he was very powerful. Do you think he's going to be, you know, do you think he'll still stand out as somebody super dangerous at light heavyweight, or just, you know, it'll be kind of average now?
I think he's going to move similar like in the lower division, but he's just going to feel different timing, different power, you know, because I'm bigger than Adesanya. I'm bigger than the guys from lower division. So that's going to be different for him. He can train with, you know, bigger guys, but, you know, fight is a fight. Sparring is a sparring. It's two different things. And he's going to feel it inside the octagon.
Yep. So this is taking place in Salt Lake City. You ever been there before?
Yeah, I'm here in Salt Lake 4 days already, 5 days.
Okay.
Because, you know, attitude is different, time zone is different. I am feeling it. So that's why I'm here earlier to catch the climate. And, you know, 5 days. And today we do our morning session and I feel very great. So everything is perfect.
Perfect. Looking forward to it. So Salt Lake City is a bit of a bizarre place. You know, if you go out and you beat Alex Pereira, I don't think you're going to be able to get a drink. I mean, what are the Polish going to do? I'm pretty sure you guys want to celebrate in style.
I've got good manager and I'm always after the fight when I come back to Paul, to the room, everything waiting for me. So I don't... She know what to do, how to do. So I'm not worried about this. But anyway, I will for sure, we go to the city and, you know, we will see how Salt Lake City live in the night. Why not?
Yeah. Was there any talk? Did you hear anything from your manager or from the UFC about this fight potentially getting bumped up to a title fight?
Yeah, I've got this on my, you know, on my contract. Yeah, if I won, next fight for the title.
Oh, so sorry, no, but I meant you and Pereira. There was no talk of that being for a belt.
No. We talk about this. They will change status of this fight, but for this moment, they not change anything. But we talk about this, yes.
No, of course. How's life in general, Jan? I mean, obviously...
All good. You know, everything is perfect. No injuries. You know, everything is like should to be. Everybody around me, healthy. Yeah, I'm happy man, you know?
Yeah. How old are you, Jan?
40.
You're 40 years old. Wow. Still going strong. About to become.
Yeah, I still feel it. You know, soon. I still like to do it. When I go to the gym, I go there. You know, not that I have to go there because I want to go there to do something, to train, to, you know, kick someone, take the punches. I just like to do it. But I feel that I'm 40. Not, I don't feel like 10 years ago. So I changed a little bit in my, you know, in my preparation, and everything is like should to be.
Yeah, no, good. I'm excited for the fight, man. What do you think about that main event, Justin Poirier, Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje? I mean, that's a ridiculous fight.
Good job. that's very, very nice fight to watch. We will see who's gonna win the fight. But you know, I'm focused about my fight right now. You know, but after the fight, I will go to the green room and watch.
Yep.
What's happening over there? But that's gonna be also like, you know, I think that they bring some heavy punches to the side inside the octagon, and that's gonna be a great fight to watch. But I don't want to choose who gonna win.
No, of course. So next Saturday night, when you're in the ring, Mark Goddard, Herb Dean, whoever it is, when they say fight, you and Alex Pereira go forward. What have you seen in your mind?
What I see. Great fight in stand-up in the first round. But second round, I take him down or knock him out or submit him on the ground. This is what I see. This is what I do when I do my visualization.
Yep.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, he trains with Glover Teixeira. He was a tremendous coach and obviously was a great fighter. Do you think, though, that there's not been enough time for him to be able to truly learn the skills required?
For sure he's going to learn something, but I think it's too short, you know? But I will answer after the fight for this question. Yeah. But I think I have to be ready for everything. But maybe he is like, you know, someone like superhero, and he, you know, learned so fast, and he will be great on the ground. So I have to be careful about this. So we also do this part of jabbing in the gym, but I don't think so. He is a stand-up fighter, and you know, he will try to be all fight on his feet.
What happens if he walks out and he does the bow and arrow and he sees you in the cage and
I bring my shield, I bring my, you know, sword, take his arrow on my shield, cut the you know, my sword, like, cut his head off. This is what I prepared for him.
Yeah, of course. I saw on your Instagram, you're still going back to the place in the forest.
Always before each fight.
Yeah.
Grab energy from that.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I mean, the fact that, I mean, I know you used to do it, but you're still doing it. Why?
Yeah,
I mean,
do you
truly believe that and it just gets you in the mindset?
You have to believe. You have to believe in something like this, because if you not believe, it will not working. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, placebo, something like this. If you believe, that will be working. If you not believe, it's not going to be working. I believe in myself. I believe in my fist. I believe that I can knock him out. If I will not believe in that, I will not go inside the octagon, never. So you have to believe.
No, but by going to the forest, to the site, what is it that you believe that does?
You know what I believe? I believe that because I found this guy, he's hanging out. So I think I just helped him to go to the other side. And now he's like, you know, he gave me his energy from different place. This is what I believe.
Interesting. No, I like it, man. It's cool. It's cool as hell. What a story.
Yeah, you know, maybe if someone will, you know, like if someone, different people will find him, maybe they will stole something from his pocket or something like this, you know. I don't touch him, you know. I just, you know, I touch him.
Hope Come on, Jan. Jeez,
you know, now I'm laughing, but when I found him, I wasn't. Yeah, I touched him the stick and asked him, "You are alive?" But that was a stupid question because
that's crazy. Did you really? Oh, I didn't know that. So you prodding him with a stick and you're like, "Are you alive?"
Yeah,
hello, buddy.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. But you know, he was like this. No, he wasn't alive.
Wow.
Yeah, it was creepy, very creepy. I hope so. The first one, and I hope so, last one.
Yeah. You're a married man, right? Are you married to your partner?
No, we just live together. She's my fiance, but I don't put ring. I put a lot of rings, but not that one.
You got to be careful. You got to take your time, buddy. I was engaged for about 14 years.
If I say, of course I will say yes, but this don't change anything. We've got son, we've got two dogs, we've got home. So yeah, we are just living together our best life, you know?
It's just a formality. Does she ever, how does she feel about your fight career? Does she love it? I mean, I was lucky. My wife,
I meet her in the...
getting older, she was like, maybe you need to retire now.
Yeah. So, first of all, I meet her because she worked for KSW before. Everything was happening on backstage, was on her head. So when I go to the fight, she come, grab me, now it's your turn, go there and have some fun, you know? So, you know, so she is in this sport hall her life because her brother also was a fighter in Poland.
Got it.
And she is my manager, so...
Oh, my God, it's all in-house.
Yes, so you know, all money stay at home.
That's the perfect setup. It's a perfect setup. All right. And what about your son? How old's he?
2.5.
Oh, so he doesn't know anything.
But when I turn off the TV and show my fights, he said, daddy, yes. So he recognized me.
That's
but
amazing.
Still, you know, maybe two more years and then he will start understand what happened.
So Saturday night, you're going to go out. Are you the favorite with the bookies? I would imagine so. With the bets maker.
With the what?
For gambling. Are you the favorite? I would have thought so. Harrington,
I don't know. When they announced the fight, I was.
Yeah.
But now
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe something changed. But I don't watch. I don't care. I can be underdog. I can be. Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I think stylistically, you've got a very, very, very strong chance of winning. And that's no disrespect to Alex. I'm a huge fan of Alex. I think he's an incredible fighter.
A lot of respect to him. On paper, yeah. I should take him down and submit him. But, you know, fight is the fight.
You never know, right? You never know. I think you shoot within 2 minutes.
We will see. But I like stand-up, you know. I like stand-up. I like fighting stand-up, but you will see. We will see. I've got, you know, game plan. I know with coaches, I know what to do. And let's go. Have some fun inside there.
Indeed. All right, so you get this job done. Very good chance you'll go up against Jiří Procházka. But that's down the line. I'll tell you what we're going to do right now. We're going to ask Harrington, our producer. We've got some questions for you on Twitter, Jan, if you don't mind. So, Harrington, please join the show and pick the good ones, please. And don't be offended by what he looks like, Jan.
Okay.
So the biggest request so far in the questions is whether or not you have another song for us.
Another what?
Song.
Another song?
Yeah, people love it when you sang on here.
They want me to sing another song?
They would love to sing another
last
song.
Last time you sung like an Irish jig. No, last time you sung like a Polish, like, folk song.
Yes.
So give us another.
Give me 1 second. I'm not good singer when
you're
not
fantastic.
Drunk. I am, but I need drink 3 beers and then I can sing everything.
Yeah.
What they want? Give me another question, please.
Hold on. Give me the Polish national anthem.
Oh, it's very. You cannot sing Polish national hymn in, you know, like this.
Oh,
you
really?
Have to stand down. You have to be very, you know. Yeah, I cannot do it like this. You have to stand down. No, and hand on your heart, that. You know, it's not the situation.
All right. No. I respect that. Harrington.
Thank you.
Okay. So you were just mentioning KSW a second ago. You were prominently at their Coliseum show where they had like 100,000 people in the football stadium. Can you just tell me what that was like and if that's a dream for you down the road in your UFC career?
Yeah, that was amazing show. 50,000 people, you know, in the national stadium, you know, great show, great fights. There will be something amazing if UFC go to Poland and do, you know, me against Procházka on this stadium. You know, it will be crazy.
Yeah, no, that would be incredible. I mean, that's the fight I think a lot of people want to see. Like, especially, I mean, that would be a huge fight in Europe, man.
Yes, I agree.
And Jiří Procházka, what do you think of him? I mean, because he's an incredible fighter.
He's a weird guy, very crazy style, but this style is working. So, crazy man.
he's crazy, but
in good way. I like it.
I was going to say, I like the crazy because he's not your conventional, normal type of guy, but I like that. I like characters. I like interesting people.
You know, but I read one time that he go to the basement, was there 3 days or something like this, because he need to fight against his demons.
Yeah.
And this is different between me and him. With my demons, I'm a very good friend, you know. I don't have to fight against them.
Yeah. We got to embrace the demons, you know what I mean? What are your demons, Jan? You know, if you're happy to share. I've got demons. My God. You got any that you're happy to share?
You know, sometimes you better don't say too much.
Yeah. No, I know. So. Exactly. We'll keep those private. Harrington, we got one more before we let Jan go.
Nico Barilovitz wants to know, what is your favorite fight so far in your UFC career? And I'll hop on.
My favorite fight? Second one with Jimmy Manua, for sure.
Yep.
And for sure with Reyes.
Mihalidis?
With Reyes. But we're talking about my size, or?
Yeah, no, Dominic Reyes. I thought you said Mihalidis.
No, Dominic Reyes and my rematch against Jimmy Manua, always.
Okay, and I'm sure next week will be another classic as well. We're looking forward
to it. I hope so. I believe in that.
Yeah, can't wait. No, we're a massive fan of you here, Jans. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. Really appreciate it. I'll let you get back to Salt Lake City. I'll let you get back to the altitude.
You're going
to
be here or no?
No, I leave for London. I'm jumping on a plane today. I'll be there for 10 days.
Oh, go to London. Yeah, say hello to Marcin Tybura.
Yeah, no, I will. Hey, Marcin Tybura, Tom Aspinall this weekend.
Yeah.
What do you think happens there?
You know that I always support Marcin. We are friends. We train together sometimes. Yeah. So, and yeah, he's got everything to shock the world. And I believe he's going to win this fight, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a weird heavyweight guy because he's heavyweight, but he moves like light heavyweight.
Really?
Yes. And this is his very good weapon, you know, because you don't expect that.
Yeah, but that's what they say about Tom Aspinall as well, because he is big and he does move very light. So, yeah, interesting, man. Interesting. All right, well, listen, Jan, thank you very much, buddy. I really do appreciate your time. All the best next week. Kick some ass. Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
All right, my man. Take it easy, brother. And there he is. Harrington, jump on. I am by myself. We are running solo. Anthony Smith is having Wi-Fi issues. Are you looking for the perfect way to start your day and improve your mood, boost your energy levels, and strengthen your immune system? Well, look no further. Root Apothecary has developed a range of products that have been proven to have a positive impact on health and performance. Adaptogens are growing in popularity as stress resilience is increasingly recognized as influential overall health, wellness, and performance. It helps all those things. Root Apothecary adaptive greens, heavily stacked with performance mushrooms like lion's mane and cordyceps, powerful adaptogens like ginseng and bacopa extract, a strong synergy of probiotics, milk thistle, and other botanicals that support improved overall health and performance by improving the mind, the body, resilience to ongoing pressures. A lot of companies right now are putting adaptogen buzzwords on their labels without delivering ingredients that offer real therapeutic potential. Adaptogens and performance mushrooms only deliver on their reputation when they contain the active compounds that these reputations are built on. And of course, that is what Root Apothecary has. Root Apothecary has been around for 10 years with a function-first mentality. No chasing novelty trends, no cutting corners, no proprietary blends, no virtual signaling, no synthetics. And no bullshit, okay? Their team has worked with thousands of clients over the past decade in every imaginable application of improved health and performance. Whether it's the busy mom, the entrepreneur, to the elite athlete, or the student struggling with social anxieties and everybody in between, Roots Apothecary will help you out. Mentally, physically, you'll feel great. Try it out. Head on over to rootsapothecary.com. Use the promo code Bisping at checkout for a huge 40% off your order. Once again, that is promo code Bisping for 40% off your order at rootsapothecary.com. Harrison, I'm just gonna give you one bit of advice.
Yes, sir.
And it's been said in the comments.
Oh.
And welcome to the show, everybody, ladies and gentlemen. And big shout out to Jan Blachowicz. We also have Bo Nickel joining us shortly as well. When someone's, this is really, I don't want to be that guy. I'm not perfect. I'm far from perfect.
Whatever you're going to say, I need to hear it.
Don't be overly enthusiastic to what they're saying. Like, we're like, the faces, man. The faces, they can be a bit much. Okay. Yeah, I know you're trying to, you know, but I love you.
Here's the thing, Mike, you need to understand this. I'm not a tough guy. I'm not a fighter. I'm a nerd. I'm an absolute nerd for MMA. So when I hear these guys, Jan Blachowicz was just on a phone call with me. It's mind blowing to me. The fact that I get to talk to you every week is amazing. So that's actually genuine.
No,
and anybody who gives me hate for
it. Hey, well, if that's the case, I take it all back. How you been, man? Good to see you. And ladies and gentlemen, as I say, Anthony Smith is in training camp, of course, and where he's at right now, he's got some Wi-Fi issues, so he'll be back on Thursday. But we've got Bo Nickel, we've got Jan, and we've got Michael Harrington. We've also got a lot of stuff to talk about. Obviously, at the weekend, we had Holly Holm versus Mayra Bueno-Silva. I thought Bueno Silva looked incredible. You know, no disrespect to Holly Holm. She's been around for a long time, but Bueno Silva just walked her down. She was more aggressive. Of course, Holly, we know the drill with Holly. Excellent boxing, beautiful kickboxing, fantastic footwork, tons of experience. But Myra Bueno Silva, man, I mean, when she got that ninja choke, it wasn't just that. It's when everything she was throwing with nasty intentions, as opposed to Holly, which was, her game plan was always, you know, about maintaining range, using jabs, straight shots, and a lot of circular movement. But I thought she did fantastic, Harrington.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought, like, with this new Holly Holm that we've seen over the last few fights where, you know, she's been getting takedowns and adding the wrestling into her game, I thought that was going to serve her really well. I thought she was going to be able to stand up on the feet and kind of outclass her, you know, for the first two rounds, and then able to you know, get her wrestling going in the later half of the fight when she was less dangerous. Instead, Myra took it to her on the feet. That was crazy.
Yeah. No. Well done to Myra. Obviously, I think we're going to have Jessica Penne versus Raquel Pennington for the vacant bantamweight title. I think Myra Bruno Silva is right there. She'll probably get the winner. Have you seen Jessica Penne lately? She is like going full heel on Twitter and stuff like that. Have you seen it?
So I've seen quite a bit, you know, of her talking right from the moment that Amanda Nunes retired in the cage.
Oh, God. I know. Listen, I'm not talking crap about Jessica Penne, but to say that Nunes was scared and all the rest of it, it's crazy, but still, Jack Della Maddalena, right? Oh man, I gotta give a shout out. What's his name? Basil Hafez. Oh, Basil coming through, shocking the world. My God, unbelievable. I thought, look, listen, anytime you take a fight on 5 days' notice, you're trying to get into the UFC. And, of course, Anthony Smith was talking about him last week and saying he's really good, he's a great grappler and all the rest of it. And to be honest, if anyone listening to this, if you are a young fighter that's, you know, fighting professional and you want to get in the UFC, I don't want to hear about fucking training camps. I hear people talk about, oh, this camp, that camp. When I used to be down the gym, someone that's had one fight, they're talking about training camps. You don't have training camps at that stage of your career. At that stage of your career, you're always in training. You're always staying in shape. You're always taking fights when they come available and all the rest of it, trying to get a fucking reputation. So there's no training camps. And you can see that with this Basil Hafez because he was in great shape. I mean, he was forcing those takedowns against Jack Della Maddalena, which of course you want to do because Jack's boxing is ridiculous. If you saw the fight, very close, right? Round one clearly went to Basil. Round two, you know, Jack Della Maddalena landed some heavy shots, but Hafez had some control time, right? You predicate it on damage, though. That's the number one criteria, I guess. And then round three, I think that was clearly Jack's. I thought Jack was so refreshingly honest, though, on the microphone. It was hilarious when DC said it was a split decision. And he said, oh, I wasn't sure. But the judges make a lot of bad decisions these days, so I thought I might be in with a chance.
Oh, man, that was awesome. The biggest takeaway for me, other than Basil Hafez's chin being, must be made of granite. He ate some insane shots in that fight. It felt like Jack went for that guillotine 16 times, and every single time he did it, Hafez had the answer to just get into top control, and then Jack had very few answers there. For a guy who was supposed to be fighting Sean Brady this weekend, right? A top 10 ranked guy. Is that a hole in his game that's massive enough where this might have been a blessing in disguise to get this step back and fight Basil versus top 10 opponents?
No. I don't think you need to look at that. And I don't want to go into too much deep into analysis because we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm basically going through the main, and I'm just trying to get to, help me out, Chelsea Chandler. And doing the running man, you know, we'll get to that in a second. I think for Jack Della Maddalena, look, listen, he's been in Vegas for weeks now. He's done multiple weight cuts. I think all of that is a draining process. It affects your energy. He's keeping the carbohydrates low. He's doing two weight cuts. That affects your power, your strength, and all the rest of it. Not taking away from Basil Hafez. I thought he was incredible. But there you go. Jack Della Maddalena, still undefeated in the UFC. One of my favorite fighters, although he'll learn a lot from that. Can't jump to the guillotines like that. I mean, you've got to maintain top position. Granted, he came close, but still. Anyway, right there. Last one, then we're going to move on and we're going to talk about this light heavyweight situation. And we have Bo Nickel joining in 4 minutes, actually. And he's always on time. Okay. Mm-hmm. If there's a man that's on time, it is. And this time, be ready with the questions from Twitter.
Yeah, I got it. I'm already on.
Have a little look. Chelsea Chandler going up against Estela Nunes, right? Is that who it was? Where was it? She's not in. You haven't put this. Oh, there it is. Norma Dumont, Chelsea Chandler. Listen, Norma Dumont got the job done. God bless her. Good for her. She looked very, very good. Chelsea Chandler went in that one. There was a bit of spiciness at the weigh-ins. And I'm seeing the memes. Brian, can you play some of the memes? Because Harrington put them in. And I feel for her. I do feel for Chelsea Chandler. But listen, she took some heavy shots, right? And you're in flight or flight mode. Simple as that. Do you know what I mean? And at that point, she almost got bingo. Oh, this is a good one. Look, knocking the sonic rings out of her. And then off she pops, running through. You know, oh, God, they're bastards. She literally, the Indiana Jones. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, my God. Oh, show me some others, Brian. Look, listen, you're trying to get out of there, right? And I get it. People are going to talk crap. Oh, there we go. New Year's resolutions, me on January 2nd. Yeah. Listen, I understand any criticism. The reality is when you step in there in the octagon and you turn around and you do that, you are going to get some shit. And it's a shame for her because it takes balls to step in there. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not mocking her. We're laughing at the memes and all the rest of it. But it was at that moment I knew I fucked up. Yeah, no shit. That'll do, Brian. Look, listen, we've seen it before. I mean, Conor McGregor did it against Nate Diaz in the rematch a couple of times. There's that picture of Nate Diaz pointing and laughing as McGregor's gone for a little jog. Caleb Starnes, when he fought, was it Nate Quarry? Yeah. I mean, he got a lot of shit for that one. I think he got let go from the organization.
Probably.
Well, right?
Yeah, I think so.
He was on a losing streak anyway, so I don't think that was the reason. But, yeah. I mean, just I guess when you support... Go on.
I was going to say, just this year, CJ Vergara did it against Daniel Lacerda in a fight where, I mean, the only way he was surviving was doing the running man. Yeah. And he came back to win that fight. So,
yeah. But still, people don't like to see it. Fans don't like to see it. I don't necessarily like to see it. I'm not criticizing Chelsea at that moment in time. Do what you've got to do to stay alive. You know what I mean? But, you know, that is actually a foul on the scorecards. Timidity. I mean, you got to fight. I mean, intelligent and defending yourself. I mean, you could say that's intelligent defense, right? Would you say that's intelligent defense?
Look, if someone's punching you and you run away from them and they can't punch you, I'd say you've intelligently defended.
And that would be my number one rule.
My mom always said that that's the smartest thing to do if somebody's trying to fight.
It is the smartest thing to do. Ladies and gentlemen, don't be a tough guy on the streets. If someone's trying to kick off, just walk away. It takes the bigger man to walk away. My mum always used to say that to me as a child. I said, Mum, what are you talking about? Because I was always getting into scraps. She was like, Michael, when will you learn? It takes a bigger man to walk away. And it's all true. You know, of course, conveniently, I'll say that these days because I walk away. I've had a few violent situations. I just walk away. Do you know what I mean? It's not worth lowering myself to them. But when you're in there, you sign a contract. God bless it, Chelsea. You know, give it a couple of days. MMA news moves on. Yeah. And she's even got a sense of humor about it herself. So, yeah. Oh, well.
That was that was her meme, was the last one. That was the I knew
that was her
moment. Yeah. She's cool. Yeah.
No, fair play to her. Let's talk about the light heavyweight situation then really quick, because I touched on it a little bit when Jan Blachowicz was there. The news broke last week on Thursday after we finished the show. Jamal Hill sadly ruptured his Achilles tendon, I think, or tore it or whatever it is. He's out of the fight and he's very nobly stepped away from the light heavyweight belt. Right. And as I was saying to Jan, I feel he's kind of done that because his predecessor, Jiří Procházka, tore his pec. He did that to keep the division moving along. As we know, you know, we kind of like have a laugh sometimes, but, you know, he's kind of that martial arts samurai code that Jiří lives by. And I really, really respect that. And I think because that's what got Jamal kind of a shot in the first place, he kind of feels that he needs to pay that forward to the rest of the division. And I'm a huge fan of Jamal Hill. Love him as a fighter. I think he's incredible. I think he's a great champion. I think he's a worthy champion. And I totally get this. I understand. There's two sides, just like Jan said. There's two sides to this. One side, I totally get it. I admire it. I applaud it. And then another side of it, if I'm wearing the manager's hat, is crazy. Do you know what I mean? Because that's what interim belts are for. again, don't get it twisted. I'm not criticizing Jamal Hill. I'm just giving two sides of it. One side, yeah, it's all great. Martial arts code. If you truly believe you're the best in the world and you're the champion, then you're going to come back and you're going to beat everybody. You know, I do admire that. I do. But from the other side, the practical side, the managerial side, the thinking logically side is you don't walk away from a highly coveted UFC light heavyweight championship of the world. That's what they bring in interim belts for. So that again, I'm not criticizing. I'm just speaking from a managerial side because I don't know. But if you walk away from the belt, you vacate the belt, should I say, is a better term. You vacate the belt. When you come back, do you get pay-per-view points? Because you're not the champion anymore. You know, maybe you have a deal with the UFC, but there's real financial implications for one. And the world's a funny old place. Nothing's guaranteed. You don't know what's going to happen. Do you know what I'm saying? Maybe call me a coward all you want, but I'm hanging on to that bad boy for as long as I can fucking live. Do you know what I mean? Bring in interim titles, bring in whatever you want. I'm the champ. I fucking earned that. I dedicated my life to it. And yes, the samurai code. We talk about the samurai code. Fucking, there's no guarantee you're going to get that bad boy back.
Yeah, that's true. But I do think it's like, I think it's a severity thing. You know what I mean? Like, is the Achilles rupturing? Like, I just know about it in a basketball sense. Like, that's typically a season and a half long injury. So for somebody like Jamal, who, you know, like, I don't think he was keeping that belt for the length of recovery for his injury anyway. So all you'd be doing at that point would be holding up the division. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but they were bringing an interim title. They might have made Jan versus Alex for the interim belt. Now I guess that he's actually vacated it. Then Yuri Prochazka is about ready to come back. So that's such a shame as well, because that would have been a sensational fight, Jamal and Yuri. Hopefully we get to see that down the line. And of course, rest up, Jamal, friend of the show, friend of Anthony's. He's such a great guy. I've got so much respect for him. I saw a little rumor that someone was saying he was playing basketball with DC when it happened. Is there any legitimacy to that?
So a respected MMA reporter, I believe it was Dan Jackson. I'll double check that when Bo comes on. But he came out and said that, yeah, during International Fight Week, there was the pickup game as part of the festivities, Team Cormier versus Team Hill. And there's speculation, according to him, that's where the injury took place.
Ah, well, hey, listen, no one's fault. It is what it is. You're out there playing basketball. You're trying to have some active rest. You're trying to stay fit. Shit happens. I don't know much about Achilles. I've never injured my Achilles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not a muscle you would like it. It kind of makes sense for it to be a basketball injury because that's the sport you see it the most in that and American football, because it's like the planting muscle that that gets messed up.
For sure. Yeah. But still, it's going to be a while. All right. So in terms of mixed martial, do you know what? I think Bo Nickel might have forgot.
You think? I mean, it's 4:05. There's no Penn State wrestler who's going to be that late.
No. And Bo Nickel's like one of the best dudes you could ever meet. And he just talks about gratitude and fucking being on time and living a disciplined life. I reckon. Well, we just arranged it yesterday. Maybe it slipped his mind.
12 seconds later.
What's up, guys? Sorry I'm late.
No, do not be sorry. Hey, Brian just switches over. There we go. Don't be sorry, Bo. Don't be sorry. You know, we actually just had a little joke there. We just had a little joke because we said, Bo Nickel is so dedicated. He's so honorable. He's such a great guy. You know, talks about gratitude and all that. He's not the type of guy to show up late. Literally just said, I think he might have forgotten because we only did it last minute yesterday. So I apologize.
No, I feel bad. I got a elk mount from last fall. I shot a bull elk, and so I was mounting it on my wall, and I got distracted. Yeah.
No, don't be silly. So you hunted an elk, a giant elk. You've taken it home, obviously, slaughtered it. I don't know. What do you call it? What do you call it when you chop it up?
Butcher it or process it.
Okay, and now you've got the head mounted on the wall.
So I keep it classy. I go with what's called a European mount. So it's just the skull and the antlers. It's not like a full shoulder mount. I like them both, though. I just think the Euro mount looks classy. So
Yeah, yeah, no, 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 it does, it does. We love some nice antlers in our house. We've got a few of them. So what do you do with the head there to get it to the skull? Do you just boil it down?
Yeah, boil it. Well, normal, this one, since it's from Colorado, so it's not local, so I gave it to a taxidermist to process it. So I don't know exactly how they did it, but I'm assuming they probably boiled it and stuff.
And how big was the elk?
It was pretty massive. It was probably 700-800 pounds. It was a 5x6 antler, so it was a good size. But yeah, I was eating it for pretty much the entire year. Got like over 200 pounds of meat, so it was very, very awesome.
Yeah, yeah. No, because I think you said that right after you beat. Forgive me. What was his name? Val Woodburn. After you beat Val Woodburn, you said you were going to go hunt him, right?
Yeah, that's the plan for this September. So I got a couple of hunts planned. I'm going to do Colorado, New Mexico, and then a couple more back east for some deer and stuff. So I got a few planned I'm excited about.
Nice. Well, you got a few other things planned as well. We hear you talking about Hamzat Chimaev. We hear you talking about the Allegiant Stadium. So a lot of lofty goals. But before we get there, let's talk about Val Woodburn. First of all, congratulations, because I think what you did there, and this is no surprise to you, but you... How much of a focus was it to go out there and use the hands? So you're not labeled as a wrestler.
It really wasn't a focus. You know, for me, the goal was to just go out there and win. And I think that the more I develop as a fighter and learn to use these other skills and, you know, approach, I'm getting better at these other martial arts, obviously, that I'm practicing a lot. So I think that stuff like that just kind of happens. But for me, the goal was initially go out there, take him down, submit him, get him out of there, you know, low risk, least amount of danger as possible. But the first real punch I landed wobbled him pretty heavy. And so then I just kind of let the instincts take over and took him out.
Is that the first time in MMA you've had a stoppage like that?
No, my first pro fight, I knocked the guy out very similarly, about 30 seconds.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
So that one was, you know, but definitely against a much lower level guy. I mean, my first pro fight was against an 0-0 guy who he had maybe 20 amateur fights, which was a lot of amateurs, but he was making his pro debut, same as me. But you know, this time competing against a 7-0 professional fighter is definitely a little different. So I felt like, you know, my skills are just kind of improving and it showed.
So I think I know the answer to this, and it seems like I've been looking into this far too much, because when the fight started, you went out, you threw like your level change, you threw like a double leg attempt. Okay. And he stuffed it. And afterwards I was like, that was a fake takedown attempt. He did not intend to take him down. That was to get him thinking about the takedowns so you can let go with the hands. Am I right? Or am I out of my mind?
Yeah. 100%. You know, for me,
I cracked the code.
Yeah, you got it. Initially, I thought that, you know, this guy, he's a huge underdog. He probably doesn't really think he can win. He's going to come out and just rush me. He's going to blitz me, throw a bunch of looping punches, try to land something crazy, maybe try to throw a knee and, you know, just rush into me. And then I was going to slip outside, throw straight left hand and take him down. And, you know, he didn't do that. He sat back. He started to, you know, he was actually looking to, you know, fight, defend. And which I think was, you know, an interesting strategy. It wasn't what I expected, but he stuck to the game plan right away, which was just kind of, so I had to make adjustments on the fly. I was like, okay, so now I'm not going to be able to counter. He's trying to counter. So let me throw something at him. So first punch straight, I threw a straight left, but I looped it a little bit just with the adrenaline and stuff. And it went right by his face, just barely missed him. And I was like, dang it. I thought if I would have landed that, I think it would have knocked him out. But, from there, you know, I had thrown that punch. He tried to counter me. And so now I'm thinking, all right, I need to get him more worried about my wrestling. So then one of my best takedowns, straight left hand into a double leg. So I throw straight left hand and I'm just thinking, just like just hit him with my shoulder, right? Just get low, kind of see where his hips are at, see how he feels and see where he sprawls. You know, I'm not going to fully commit myself, but I'm just going to see what he does. So I throw the straight left, hit him hard with my shoulder and he kind of hit me heavy with his hips. And I was like, okay, that was good. Good. No, little defense there, but all right, let's see what else you're going to do now. So now then from there, I start playing with my front hand. I drop my front hand down just to kind of see where his front hand goes. And he immediately full, like arms down, looking like trying to underhook me. And then in that moment, it seems like when the fight's happening, it's happening in slow motion. It's happening. It seemed like there was 10 seconds where I got to decide what I'm going to do next. And so then I just decided, all right, bro, you're about to get a right hook. So I dropped down, boom, come over with the right hook. And I immediately knew that I hit him hard. And so then, you know, again, the time slowed. So it's kind of like me deciding what I'm going to do. Am I going to throw a straight left hand? Am I going to take him down? Is he hurt enough to where he is he hurt enough to the point where he's still dangerous, or is he like not going to be able to touch me? And then, you know, I decided to throw a straight left hand. I landed another shot. And then from there, I knew it was over. I knew he wasn't going to be able to hit me with anything damaging. So then I just put him out.
See, I mean, obviously we've spoke about, you know, your history in combat sports, and you've been around it for so long. But again, that's proving so helpful, because the way you're talking there, I mean, what was that, your fifth fight?
Mm-hmm.
That is an incredibly high fight IQ, and the fact that you're able to stay so calm and composed, you know, and the fact that your mind is thinking like that. Because when I started fighting, I mean, geez Louise, the first 10, 15 fights, I mean, everything was just a blur, to be honest. I wasn't able to, you know, coherently think and slow my mind down. Have you always been able to do that?
You know, I was able to do that in wrestling, and I think that helped me a lot in wrestling. And it did seem to me towards the end of my career that matches would just happen very slowly, and I'd be able to pick and choose what I decided to do. But with fighting, I feel like that's really come on my last two fights. Before that, you know, there was, I think, a little more nervous energy, a little more adrenaline, and I was more so just, you know, get him on the ground or, you know, reacting. And now I feel like I'm able to slow the fight down a little bit more. I'm able to kind of strategize, plan, and set my opponent up. That's what I've really been working on a lot lately. I would say the main thing I've been working on is how can I use my wrestling to set everything up, to dress everything up, right? Like, yeah, at the end of the day, I'm more than likely want to take my opponent down. Or, you know, let's say if we want to strike, I'm probably going to want to land a straight two, right? Like, that's a lot of times people's strongest punch. You know, I have a good straight two. So you don't, if I'm going into a fight, I'm not just going to go out there and throw the straight two and shoot a double. Like, it's how do I dress it up? How do I make it look like something else? How do I get information out of my opponent to where I see how he's going to react? I can now predict it and then come at him with something versus just rush in blind, you know? So now it's, to me, a lot about thinking, planning ahead. And that's a big part of, you know, fighting that I love is that strategy. And yeah, I just have really enjoyed competing the last couple of times, because I think I've been able to do that a little bit.
Yeah. Excuse me. No, that's really interesting. And I think, you know, because still, sadly, there's critics to this sport that don't understand the finer nuances and don't really understand the technical abilities and the amount of training that goes in there. But just to hear you talking about that and talking about the strategic side, of course, we do that all the time as announcers, as analysts. But, I mean, you laid that out pretty well. Let me ask you this. Here's a question. And we need the truth. We need the truth, Bo, because I know you're a wrestler at heart. And you gotta stay true to the boys, okay? To Penn State or your coaches, whatever it is, right? But UFC debut, pay-per-view, Jamie Pickett, take him down. You submit the guy last time out. Pay-per-view, opener, you go out, you take him out with these bad boys. Which one felt better? Which one did you prefer?
You know, I'll be 100% honest. Like you said, I'm a wrestler through and through. Knocking somebody out is the best feeling in the world. You can't compare
it. It's amazing.
It's incredible, really. Like, you just, when you put the guy out, it's over, they're on the ground, you get up, it's just, it's unbelievable. Even pinning a guy, you know, in wrestling, whatever it is, it doesn't compare. So, you know, for me, I just want to continue to be wise to that and know I can't let that, like, overcome everything else that goes into a fight, right? Like, I'm still going to be fighting smart. I'm still going to train a certain way. Yeah, it's the best feeling ever, but I'm emotional.
I know. And I think you see, because it is a trap. You see a lot of great wrestlers falling into this trap. You know, they come to the UFC, they're all about the wrestling, they start finishing people with hands, and then they abandon their wrestling. You know what I mean? And they're just pure strikers, you know? Kamaru Usman. I mean, there's so many.
For sure, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. After the fight, any talk with the UFC about a potential return? I mean, I don't think you took a single shot. I mean, I'm assuming you're going to get it back in there pretty quick.
You know, I haven't talked with Dana or Hunter. I'm going to take like another week and just kind of think about things. Talk with my coach, Mike Brown, my management team, first round management. And, you know, we have a lot of options. For me, I would like to fight again. I would, as a competitor, I would love to fight again as soon as possible. But then when I take a step back and I look at my career and the trajectory that I'm headed on and how the last years went and just kind of assess everything from, you know, trying to be unbiased and not emotional, because, you know, at the end of the day, my favorite thing to do is go out and compete in front of 20,000 people and on a pay-per-view. And that's the most exciting part of what I get to do. But there's also an analytical side of what's the best move for my career. I'm barely 13 months into being a professional. I fought 5 times the last 13 months. And I want to continue to develop my skills and improve and get better. And a lot of that happens in training. And when I train this last year, I've really just been in training camp, right? Like, and training camp is a different animal than just training and working on your skills and being creative, that type of thing. So I could see myself fighting in December. I could also see myself taking a little more time off, you know, maybe 6-8 months and just training, improving, getting better and fighting early next year. So that's stuff that I'll, again, continue to consult my coaches on, consult my management team and see what's best for me. But, you know, I'm not in a rush. I'll get the belt when the time comes and when I'm ready to do it. And so, you know, I see myself fighting 3-4 more times, fighting ranked guys, and I'm probably not going to have to fight, you know, 10 ranked guys to get to the belt. I'm probably going to be able to, you know, fight a guy in the top 15, fight a guy in the top 5, maybe one more guy, get to the title. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of what ifs, but I'm just trying to map it out as best I can.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard to disagree with you. I always say this every time I speak to you. I mean, listen, we all know about your wrestling history and what you're capable of and what you've done so far. And when you speak about yourself, it's not from a position of arrogance or boasting or there's nothing like that at all. I think it's just an awareness of the body of work that you've put in, the sacrifices you've made throughout the years, and the results speak for themselves. You know, I do agree with you. You know, I do think it is probably going to be that kind of trajectory. You're very mature as well. Sorry, I don't mean to condescend you and stand, you know, but a lot of fighters, their egos can get the better of them. You know what I'm saying? I don't pick up that vibe from you at all. I think your problem is going to be finding opponents, though. I know we talked about this last time we spoke, but I can't imagine. I mean, Val Woodburn in some ways was perfect because when you're not in the UFC, they say, take this fight, and more than likely they get rewarded with another crack of the whip, right? Yeah. But if I'm just signed with the UFC, I don't want to take you on. If I'm ranked in the UFC, I don't want to take you on. I'm like, I fought tooth and nail to get to this point, and I'm going to throw it away to Bo Nickel,
right?
The wrestling superstar that's just going to ragdoll 99.999% of the population.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think that with that being said, the UFC is definitely offering these guys a lot of money, right? That can entice people. It's not something where it's like, hey, fight Bo Nickel for 12-12. You know, they're definitely up in the contracts. I know they're paying guys extra and stuff. And and I think a lot of people still don't really realize what they're getting into when they're fighting me, you know? And I don't mean to, again, I don't feel like I'm an arrogant guy. I feel like the way I compete, the way I fight is humility is one of the strong principles that I feel like that's my foundation. And so, but I do think that at the same time that most of these guys just don't understand what it's like to actually get in there with me. You know, they're confident until the bell rings, until I grab them. And so I think there'll be guys that want to test themselves and believe that they can beat me. They've maybe wrestled with other Division I wrestlers, maybe even an All-American or maybe even an NCAA champion type guy. But, you know, that's not me. I'm a different level from that. There was guys that were the top in the country that I would throw down and pin in less than 60 seconds on a regular basis, you know, and that's just the facts. You can check the stats on that. It's not, myself sound any better than I am, but I think a lot of guys don't really understand that. They don't really know that. They've never obviously felt what that's like. And so I think that they're interested to find out, and I'm interested.
They are interested to find out. I'm interested to find out. Obviously, I mean, I'm old and washed up, my bloody body's destroyed. But whenever I hear about somebody like you, and there's other examples as well, I always think, I say, I wonder, yeah, how could you do? Do you know what I mean? Because as a fighter, as a competitor, as a guy that wrestles and grapples and stuff, you do think, I mean, obviously you are a specialist of all specialists. So, you know, I'm going to grab, don't be alarmed if I grab hold of you one day. I'm just trying to body lock you.
I would love to. For me, I love rolling, wrestling, anything like that. It's the most fun thing for me. So whatever, we can roll for sure.
No. We'll make it happen one day. So I always say you're like the ultimate good guy, the ultimate example, you know, to young men. I mean, because so far, I mean, listen, it's early days. We don't know how you're going to end up. You might end up like Conor McGregor. The fame might go to your head. You know, you start making the money. You know, you're telling everyone to go fuck themselves. We don't know. We don't know where Bo Nickel's going to go. But right now, you're the ultimate good guy. And your ultimate dream is to go up against the ultimate bad guy. The Bond villain, Khamzat Chimaev, at the Allegiant Stadium. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, you know, I just think what better way to, I don't even say culminate a career, but to just have a milestone than to compete against a guy who everybody is afraid of, who, you know, has so much hype and so much excitement. And honestly, he's just that good. You know, like, he's backed it up with every single performance that he's had. He's, you know, performed incredibly. And, you know, a lot of people aren't interested in fighting him for whatever reason. But I want to be that guy. And I want to be the guy that kind of – if I to get to the level that I want to be in this sport, to be the pound-for-pound number one guy on the planet, and to go down, you know, as one of the greatest fighters that has competed in the octagon, that's the type of events that I have to be in. You know, Allegiant Stadium's 70,000 people or whatever in the crowd, me versus Khamzat, USA versus Russia. I think that there's just no better story in MMA right now than that. We're really like two forces just kind of heading towards each other, destined to collide, I feel. And, you know, I think at the same time, this is definitely in the future. You know, for me, I want to get to 10-0, 11-0, 12-0, establish myself in the game, build my reputation. Hopefully one of us is champ at the time. I think that it's a fight that has to be for the belt. And I think that it would just be that much more exciting. And that's what a fight like this deserves. So, you know, that's something that I have in my mind. I keep it on my mind every day, training, running, you know, all the sacrifices I make, that's what I'm working towards. And I don't think I'm maybe on his radar as much. And I think that makes sense just given our positions in the sport, right? He's gunning for the belt in the top five, right up there. I'm just now starting, but at the same time, you know, that's where my mind's at, and that's where I'm headed. And I don't think that there's going to be anything that stops me from getting to that point. I just hope that he continues to win, because I think we both have to be undefeated at the time for it to get its due again. But
yeah,
fired up. I think about this stuff, and it makes me grind even more. And, you know, I hope he's working hard too, because I want to beat him at his absolute best.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, with the political climate as well, I mean, if you build this the right way, Russia versus USA, two undefeated in the UFC, that would be, it'd be a blockbuster for sure. Well, listen, we're going to let you go with a few questions off Twitter. Harrington, our producer, has been beavering away in the background, I believe, and should have a few tasteful, respectable and well-delivered questions, Harrington.
I got a couple of them. So just following up on that, just technically, the Twisted Steel 213 wants to know, give us your breakdown of how that fight goes down with Khamzat. Also, he wants to know about how your transition from wrestling to MMA, how effective it is to wrestle under the unified rules.
And then just real quick, on Khamzat's wrestling accolades, mm-hmm. Do you look at them and kind of giggle?
Yeah, you know, it was actually funny. I saw a video the other day of him competing against a guy, and it was, you know, quite a few years ago, however long, 5, 6, 7 years ago. But I was just watching it. I've never actually – I watched some highlights of him wrestling, right? And he looks good, but then, you know, he's competing against like 16-year-old kids, and it's like, well, okay, that's a joke. But anyways, I was watching it, and I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this match, kind of break him down, see what he's doing. literally the only thing he did was fake double leg. And I'm like, dude, we have every 8-year old in Pennsylvania can do that exact same thing, like at the same skill level you're doing. And yeah, he wrestled hard and stuff, but I was just like, this guy's a good wrestler. What are we talking about? You know, like, I don't know, but I don't want to, I don't mean to be, you know, negative towards people's skills and stuff. I obviously respect the skills, and MMA is a completely different ball game, right? Like, if we were to wrestle in a match, it's a joke. Like, it'll end in sub 60 seconds. Like, I'll kill that guy. Not even competitive. But in an MMA fight, like I said, different ball game. I think my skills in wrestling translate very well to MMA. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. And so, you know, with folk style wrestling, the application to MMA, I think, is the strongest out of any combat sport. And that's what I have, the highest level folk style wrestling in the world. And yeah, when I look at his skills and what he does in the cage, I respect it a lot. I think that he is somebody that he competes super hard. He has a good gas tank. He's got a lot of dangerous weapons. He obviously has good grappling. He's able to take a lot of guys down and control them there. I think that if we were to fight, that there's zero chance he's taking me down. I think I'm actually going to be holding him on the ground, especially given the fact, I mean, I'm 210 pounds. I'm 6'1". I'm not a 170 pounder like most of the guys that he's fighting right now. You know, it's a different animal when you 170 to 85 is a big jump. And I know he's a big 70, but you're talking about a different size human. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if I dominated him in the grappling, was able to hold him down. And I guarantee you I'll get him tired as well, just because I have too many competition reps in me and too much high level experience I don't get tired in competition. And I think that he would probably be super emotional charged going into the fight. And I would take advantage of that.
Interesting. Very interesting. I just want to follow up on that. And because I believe you when you talk, you know, because you're not the type of guy that's going to blow your own trumpet. You just, the proof is in the pudding. Throughout all the years of you working with these high level coaches, have they identified, I mean, of course you work hard, you're disciplined, you know, you put in all the effort, you've got a good mind for the sport, you're analytical, whatever it is. Is there something though, what makes you so good at what you do? What's always made you so special? Have coaches identified a certain character trait?
I think that, I don't know that there's one specific trait that has helped me excel. I think that, you know, to your point, I've just been really fortunate to be around a lot of great people. And I feel like my dad was a coach. And so I grew up I respected coaches a lot. I listened, I was coachable. And I think if anything, the main thing that has got me to this point is being coachable, is being open, mm-hmm. not feeling like, oh, I'm the, I can't improve. Like I'm the best there is. Like I don't need to listen to somebody. I always had so much respect for my dad growing up, so much respect for my coaches. And it was the same thing at Penn State. I never felt like I was ever too good to do anything, right? I was.
But there's a lot of people like that. There's a lot of people that are great. You know what I mean? I'm assuming you're strong as a bastard.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely don't feel like anybody I compete against is stronger than me. But it's just a lifetime of work. I think that, you know, while most people are coachable and they do all these things, they'll do it intermittently, right? They'll do it for a couple days a week, or they'll do it for a couple months a year, or maybe they'll do it for a couple years and then they'll stop. But I've been so dedicated and so focused on combat sports since I was 5-6 years old. You know, I remember at probably, you know, 5, 6, 7, I was wrestling, you know, 30, 40 matches a year. And then by the time I was 8, 9, and 10, I was wrestling almost 100 matches a year. From 10 to 15, I probably wrestled 200 matches every year. And, you know, then in high school, I was still competing 100 matches a year. So I have thousands and thousands of matches, and I was always dedicated. I played other sports. I played football and baseball. I ran track. But when I got home, I was watching film on wrestling. I would watch Big Ten Network, watch college wrestling, go on Flow Wrestling, watch the Olympics. Like, I just lived
obsession.
It. I was obsessed. And it's something, some people are obsessed for a certain amount of time and then they lose it, right? Like a lot of fighters, you see them, they start out their career, or they're at a point in their career where they just skyrocket and then they lose it. For me, I've been obsessed since I was a little kid, and now I'm 27, right? So 21 years of absolute obsession kind of it adds up.
Well, I mean, anyone wants to follow in your footsteps, take a listen to that and listen very, very carefully. Bo, we got a million things to get to. We're going to let you go. We're going to thank you for your time. And we're going to say congratulations once again on the recent performance. Can't wait to see you back in there. Keep doing what you're doing. You're a huge inspiration to a lot of people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate you for having me on.
You're the man, Bo. Take care, brother. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. And there he is, the one and only Bo Nickel. All right, guys, let's talk about Manscaped, but more importantly, their unbelievable package, which is the Performance Package 4.0. The Performance Package has everything you need. If you're a man, you're grooming, you take care of yourself, you have pride, you clean, you shower, you got to have a Performance Package in your life. Inside the package, you will find the game-changing Lawnmower 4.0. You know the one. Trim the balls, trim the private parts, don't cut yourself, do it all in the water. It's got a long battery, it's waterproof, it's got a light on it, it's cordless, it doesn't cut your ball sack. I mean, that's the main thing, but it's brilliant. You also get, though, the Weed Whacker ear, hair, and nose trimmer. Okay, so, you know, nobody wants the ear, nose hairs. Nobody wants the ear hairs, so you get rid of those. You get the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. You get the Crop Reviver Toner. You get Performance Boxer Briefs, and you get a bag to put all those things on, in even. So when you're traveling the world, you pull out, you know, you got your little package there. You look like a seasoned traveler. You also get the Shear 2.0 kit to take care of those toenails, okay? You get the stainless steel nail cutters. You get the tweezers. You get the grooming scissors. You get everything you need to take control of your feet. Okay, right now, go to manscaped.com. Use the code BISPING20. That will get you 20% off and free shipping. Get the performance package in your life. Go to manscaped.com. Use the code BISPING20. As I said, 20% off and free shipping. So there he is, the one and only Bo Nickel. Anyway, I'll be jumping on a plane shortly, flying to London. Okay, Aspinall versus Tybura. Always a pleasure to be back. And I love calling the London cards. But the planes, the travels, the airports, the getting on the plane. Okay, Harrington, I'm assuming when you're on the plane, don't lie, you're a farter. There's something about plain food. It encourages the farts. It does.
Yeah, and then you got the rebreather going, so you combine everybody on the plane's farts into one thing, and it, you know, a transatlantic flight, that's pretty gross smelling by the end of
it. It's a steaming pot of multiple farts all put through the rebreather. What's a rebreather when it's at home? You mean the air conditioning?
They're going to circulate like the
air. Yeah, the air filtration system. I'm pretty sure it's because when they pressurize the airplane, it like squeezes you a little bit and you have to fart.
Oh.
There is definitely a certain, you know, aroma to plane farts. It's
I literally just made that up too. So I didn't read that.
Like a lot of the stuff you say, Brian, a lot of stuff that you do say is made up tinfoil nonsense. Anywho, that's another time. Let me see. So yeah, anyway, the point I'm bringing this up is, listen, flying can be stressful. Okay. You've got people farting, you've got kids screaming, you're missing connecting flights, you're tired, you're jet lagged, all the rest of it. And you're paying a fortune, by the way, these days. Flights are ridiculous. The last thing I want to see if I get on a plane and I am waiting to take off is this nonsense right here.
We were both young, but never saw you. I close my eyes and the flashback starts. You're standing there on the balcony in summer air.
The Swifties.
I got to kill the audio so we don't get demonetized.
Yeah. No. The Swifties, man. I mean, the Taylor Swift phenomenon is out of control. Our local news here, they love to report on Taylor Swift. I don't know what it is. I think it's a very, you know, certain subsect of society. Ooh, we love Taylor Swift. All right, get over it. Who gives a fuck? My daughter used to like Taylor Swift when she was about 12. But if I'm on a plane and bloody 100 Swifties start with that shit, it's not going to fly.
Here's the thing. So the plane was delayed. So I will say this, for the majority of that plane, that was the best time they could have been having. You know what I mean? Like Swifties love singing Taylor Swift songs with other Swifties.
You're a Swiftie, aren't you? You're a Swiftie.
Not at all, but I understand the phenomenon. I do. I mean, this is literally probably the most popular recording artist in the history of humanity at this point, right? Because there's more people.
Yeah, which is wild.
She's breaking countless records, right? Like, you know.
Rebecca Minnelli went to Taylor Swift, and I don't mind a little bit of Shake It Off, Shake It Off. Ooh, ooh, it's a catchy little song, but so what? You know what I mean? She doesn't need to be on the news every day. And if I'm on a plane, respect my privacy. Respect what I'm, you know, I don't want to hear you singing. I don't want to, well, I have paid just as much money. Like, could you imagine if I was singing by myself?
Yeah, that would that be psychotic.
That would be an issue. If I'm sitting there going, give me a song.
Blur song too.
Yeah, yeah, he was. Woohoo, I got my head checked. Da-da-da-da. By a jumbo jet. People go, sir, do you mind not singing by yourself like some kind of maniac? Mm-hmm. But then it's okay if 100 of them do it. What kind about of. The one person that's sitting there and he's like, I don't want 100 Taylor Swift people singing.
Look, man, the sacrifice of the few for the good of the many. They're delayed just like everybody else on that tarmac. They're making the most of it.
If so you're stressed out, fan, you're missing connecting flights, yeah. You're missing family, you know, you might miss your meeting, you're tired. And on top of that, just to add insult to injury, you got these dickheads. Anyway, that wasn't the point of why I brought that up. I saw on the news the other day, and you mentioned it as well. What was the ticket? I mean, the tickets for Taylor Swift concerts are going ridiculous. And don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, we're not talking about Taylor Swift. I'm talking about tickets for the average everyday person just to get to an event these days. It's out of control because of all the ticket touts. They buy them up. These huge companies buy massive, massive blocks and portions of the tickets. And then obviously they resell them at just massive profits. But what was that ticket? What did that go for recently?
So they're saying that the average ticket price on the resale market for a $250 ticket is $1,605.
So for Taylor Swift.
For Taylor Swift. And there was also there were so many people who were talking about spending five plus figures per ticket for this show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, listen, if you're a fan, you're a fan, whatever. You spend your money on whatever you want. But I see when I don't go to concerts very often, but when I've tried to treat Rebecca and we look at them, I mean, I told you recently about that Pearl Jam experience we had to leave, and they weren't cheap tickets. You know, I know people have this all the time with UFC events as well. Do you know what I mean? Because the ticket touts buy them and sell them at such massive profits. I don't know. They've got to do something about this. This can't be allowed to continue.
Well, they are. Like, I know the state of New Jersey just put this law in effect, and they're calling it like Taylor's law or like Taylor
oh, really?
Bruce's law or something like that because of
Buffer forgets his own law. It's about time.
I think it's Springsteen because he's a pretty hot ticket in New Jersey. So
don't say that to Bruce Buffer.
No, I'll tell him it's for him. But essentially, the concept there is that they
what
would limit
call Bruce Springsteen or the boss.
The
boss and the buff.
I think that's a good podcast.
Head to head, going down Raiders Stadium. The boss and the buff. Who will survive? Only one Bruce can remain.
Anyway, I was thinking on. They would work together. You want them to fight?
No, they're fucking going at it in the Coliseum.
All right. That's good. UFC 300. They're limiting the amount of tickets that can be bought, and they're limiting the markup that you can put on the resale market for tickets. And I think that's going to something that's going to be picked up, if not nationwide, by a bunch of different states, because this is a problem for every single spot she's gone to on this tour.
Yeah, well, no, they need to make it happen. Just because I just have people, yeah, I demand messages I get from people for UFC events and just whatever in general. People
I'll complaining. Stop.
Yeah, no. But like people just buying the tickets at the regular price is fine, but the fucking the resale market. So it just blows my mind. And then when I saw Taylor Swift doing that, and I saw Luke Thomas as well. Luke Thomas had a good take on this on Twitter. He was like, noise cancelling headphones. Thank God that they were invented. If I was on that plane, he couldn't tolerate it. And I'm kind of with you there. Shout out to the one and only Luke Thomas. All right, so let's have a little bit of fun here. In terms of non-mixed martial arts, did you see this Kingpin boxing at the weekend? This might get us demonetized on YouTube, but we've got to see it for research purposes. What is this Kingpin?
Kingpin, it's like an offshoot of like Misfits. It's another one of those celebrity boxing things. I think the main event involved Anson Gibb, who's fought on like a bunch of those KSI Misfit cards. This was just another offshoot of that. And one of these girls was an OnlyFans star. you know, who got a win and celebrated accordingly. Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we could do that one. But then, Brian, have the other one of the face-off ready as well. Yeah. Because that definitely sold a few pay-per-views.
I think that's the point. They know what they're doing.
Sure. Brian, can we get a little bit of the footage, please, buddy? I mean, they've gone out there. They've put it all on the line. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Getting emotional as they're reading the cards.
Oh, she's getting emotional. She's won. You know, yeah. She doesn't know what's going through her mind. She's overcome now. She's got adrenaline running through her mind right now. She can't believe it. She did it. She climbed to the top of the mountain. There's only one thing left to do. There's only one way you celebrate, and that's you whip your tits out. Woo-hoo. Fair play. Brian, can we play the square up, though, the face-off at the weigh-ins between two girls? Pretty girls. I'm not sure why they want to box. I'm sure they're getting paid very good money, but... you know, they walk up to one another. One of them was going, a little kiss here. And look. And then the blonde is like, let's do this for real.
I mean, I'll tell you right now why they're doing this. Because 100,000 dudes must have signed up for the premium content that they have to offer, let's say.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And the OnlyFans, they'd be absolutely bloody killing it. Fair play to him. What should we get into? What's the big MMA news story? Obviously, it's the light heavyweight belt being vacant. Would have loved to get Anthony's take on that as well, because I'm sure he's got some pretty strong opinions. Yeah. The PFL, they've fixed their drug testing problem, apparently, right?
Mm-hmm. So we talked about it earlier this year. I think they had 10 people total who tested positive, including a number of people who are in the current season. So that did mess with their brackets. So to handle that going forward, by the end of the year, they will have implemented the USADA system, meaning that PFL athletes will be, you know, they'll be tested around the clock, and hopefully this won't be an issue next season.
I'm kind of surprised that they didn't do that already, though, to be fair. Why wouldn't you? You know, I mean, especially when you're having such a big problem. And then now it certainly seems they've got a lot of money, because from what I'm hearing, the PFL are in the process of buying Bellator.
Yeah, I know.
Have you seen this? I think that's...
Yeah, no, that's a pretty widely talked about thing in the industry. That's Bellator announced that they were for sale. Scott Coker said Viacom is putting them up for sale. And I know PFL is, as far as I can tell, one of the bidders so far. I think the reason that they wouldn't do it up to this point is because it's the only MMA organization with an off season. You know, so if you need USADA coming around.
Yeah, because you'd have to sign up to USADA year-round testing.
Right.
Interesting.
So it's like, why spend that money when we're not going to be even having fights in January, February, March, etc.?
Well, they're not having fights anyway. What are you drinking there, Harrison? It looks like a Bailey's. I mean, I know you don't drink alcohol.
No, I started making my own cold brew at home.
Oh, God. You've gone full hipster, have you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Look at the shirt.
What's the benefit of home brew at home?
I mean, it's not... $6 a cup at my local coffee shop is the benefit. I got like a little mason jar.
So you just make your own coffee and then put some ice in it?
Yeah. Well, no, I make it's cold brew coffee. You have to like make it a certain way. It's, I don't know. It's a nice little hobby I've gotten into.
Oh, well, good for you. Vanderlei Silva is expected to make his boxing debut against Brazilian bodybuilder and YouTuber Felipe Franco. I have no idea what Felipe Franco looks like, but he's a Brazilian boxer and YouTuber. He's going to be juiced out of his mind, right? That's for damn sure. Vanderlei Silva never saw juice. He did not want to ingest. For some reason, when I think about that, remember that time of Tito Ortiz when he was going up against Chael Sonnen in Bellator again? Remember they were doing like a thing on the news and Tito pulls out a can of juice? He says, yeah, you're the juice box. Here's what I'm going to do to the juice box. And then just smashes it up. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Poor old Tito. But yeah, do we have a picture of this guy? Oh, yeah, there we go. Looks like Yeah, totally natural.
Yeah, dude, that guy will pass the USADA test for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fair play. I hope. Yeah, I mean, listen, Vanderlei Silva, what did he do? He literally ran away years ago from USADA. Was it USADA? It was USADA. Yeah.
It was USADA.
It was USADA. Yeah.
Okay.
Or was it the Nevada State Athletic Commission? It doesn't matter. Regardless of whoever it was, I think it was at the World MMA Awards or something.
Yeah,
right?
They got him in like a bathroom or something.
Yeah. And then they tested him now, and then there was another time and he just legged it, you know. Wanderlei Silva, you don't hear from him anymore. I mean, he was a bloody legend back in the day, Wanderlei Silva. He was one of the guys that when I first watched Pride, I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I fucking love this guy. He is unbelievable. He was just so violent, you know, and you don't see many fighters like that these days, to be honest, because it's become so technical. But Wanderlei Silva was just a wrecking ball of aggression, powerful, obviously great technique and the stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, as much as I'm not a fan personally because of the steroids, and obviously we fought each other and he was talking a bit of shit, but yeah, I don't hold any grudges, but I'm not a fan personally. But as a fighter, his early career, man, you got to admire some of the performances he had.
For certain. He is now 47 years old, and he has not fought since 2018, fighting a much younger man. And it's his first boxing match ever.
Who was his last fight in Bellator, Harrington?
It was actually Rampage at heavyweight.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen Rampage? Did he knock him out? I'm assuming he knocked him out.
Yeah, TKO in the second.
Yeah. Oh, no, fair play. Rampage is looking massive these days. I don't know if you follow. Do you follow Rampage Jackson on Instagram?
I feel like I do, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he got heavy. He got very, very heavy. He's always kind of struggled with his weight. But he's been working out with some coach, lifting weights like a maniac. Rampage is looking absolutely jacked these days. Anyway, I'll be well. Rampage, right, give me a topic to talk about. What have we got? Yeah, there he is. He's lifting weights like a madman all day, every day. What have we got in non-mixed martial arts, Harrington?
Non-mixed martial arts. All right.
Non-MMA.
Check this out. A skydiver was in pursuit of, he wanted to film a lesson, right? So what do you need to film a lesson while you're skydiving? Obviously, you need the camera. He grabbed that. You know what he didn't grab? His parachute.
Oh, my God.
This is a rough one.
So hold on. Was he the instructor?
Yes.
Was to be his third jump of the day. The veteran jumper had been shooting tape with a specially rigged camera when he jumped this last time, just seconds ahead of an instructor and student whose fall he was recording. Then, to his horror, the cameraman realized that he was without a parachute and well out of reach of the other jumpers. These images are the very last he ever recorded.
So then, just to clarify, what we were seeing there was the footage that he was holding. He was filming the other two people that kind of disappeared when the parachute came up. And then he's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Could you imagine? Oh, shit. I mean, I guess in some ways that's how you'd want to go. If you spend your entire life jumping out of a plane, I don't know. What do you reckon? Do you think you would? Or is that like the biggest insult ever?
I feel like, I mean, look, the numbers for skydiving, right? Like the deaths of skydiving are so infinitesimally small. But
yeah, we talked about this last week.
But you have to know, as an instructor, you're playing with that every single time. So yeah, I do feel like career guys who are going to make a living and film things and try to make their career as skydiving instructors, feel like it's in the back of all of their minds. Like, yeah, it's probably how I'm going to die.
I have a friend of mine who is actually a 10,000 jump skydiver. And he says that the majority of accidents happen from these dudes who have 10,000 jumps that are just so used to going out that they just forget something.
Well, that's always the case because they get complacent. You know what I mean? Like anything in life, you know, you start to take things for granted. You start to not have the adrenaline. You don't have the fear anymore. You're like, this is just work. This is just another day in the it's what I do. This is my office. There's no fear here. This is what I do. It's totally fine. I've done it so many times. And you start to get complacent. And then you make mistakes. And the next minute, you're jumping out of fucking airplanes without a parachute. Jesus Christ. Oh, God.
Like, you got to figure the same thing must have happened to, like, Siegfried and Roy. You know what I mean? Like any of those things where it's like, this is a master at the craft and something goes terribly wrong. It's like, it must just be like, you know, I'm too comfortable in this now.
Hold on. Just remind me. So Siegfried and Roy, you're talking about the Vegas performers with the lions and the tigers. What did he get eaten?
Yeah, he got mauled on stage. like on his birthday show. I think he
got real vegged up though.
Yeah. He had to like retire.
Vegged up.
I think he did make a recovery, but he had to like quit performing after that, and he didn't live very much longer after.
Yeah, that's right. No, I remember hearing about it at the time. But yeah, no, you're right. Again. It's complacency. Even in fighting, I mean, like look at Bo Nickel. There's the kind of the risk. You're that good, and I don't think Bo would because he doesn't come across like that. But things change, people change. Success is a bitch. Success is great. You know what I mean? It's amazing. Everybody wants to be successful, but then little characteristics might, you know, slowly start to show themselves. Might think these guys are no good. I don't need to push myself to the limit every time, because pushing yourself to the limit is hard and it's not good and it doesn't feel good and you want to stop. It's like, well, I don't necessarily need to, because these lot can't keep up. They can't compete. Next minute, he's Siegfried and Roy and he's getting butchered. He's getting vegged up. He's getting vegged up by Hamzat Chimaev. You know what I mean? No, but that's all jokes and silliness. But yeah, that's what happens. You know, things in life start to take it for granted. The fear is in there. Next minute, wow. Crazy, man. Would you do a parachute jump?
I've done one before.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, okay. I did it. I got the DVD and everything. It was awesome. It's unlike anything else I've ever done, and it's way harder to breathe than you'd imagine. Air is just coming at you so quickly. It's like you have to like cut into it to get a breath. It's pretty crazy.
All right, guys, you got a business. Are you an entrepreneur? Do you have a store? Are you selling things, but you're not online? What are you doing? Give your head a wobble. You've got to be online. But obviously, being online, building a website, building a store, having an e-commerce platform, accepting credit card payments, all these types of things, sounds complicated, sounds time-consuming, sounds very, very expensive. Well, not anymore, thanks to Shopify, because Shopify is the e-commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. So whatever it is you're selling, they will get you online. They will get you an e-commerce platform, and they'll do it very cheap, very cost-effectively, and they will support you every step of the way. And it also, Shopify covers every sales channel from an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform. It even lets you sell across like TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all in one. Packed with industry-leading tools also to ignite your growth, Shopify gives you complete control of your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills. You haven't got to become a computer guru or a genius. You haven't got to learn how to code, and you haven't got to break the bank. By the way, there's also 24/7 customer service and an extensive business library. Shopify will be there to help you in your success every single step of the way. So get serious about your business and get on Shopify today. This is the possibility powered by Shopify. Now listen to this. You can sign up, right, for a trial period. $1 per month. Ridiculous. Get online. Get an e-store, e-commerce platform. $1 per month. Go to shopify.com/believe. Take your business to the next level today. That is shopify.com/believe for $1 per month. I mean, come on. What are you waiting for? All right, anyway, there it is. Big thank you to Bo Nickel. Big thank you to Jan Blachowicz. Excited for that one. We're going to do some questions, okay? It's me and, not Anthony, it's me and Harrington. If you have a question, I'll send them into bympod@gmail.com. You know the drill by now. Harrington.
And if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, make sure that you are subscribed to the show. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps us out. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And while we're here, hit the like button. Also, if you want to catch over 400 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 7-day free trial. Check out over 20 great shows on the network.
Oh, and also, I spoke to George St. Pierre. At the weekend. I
did That's a little on your interview YouTube channel.
On my YouTube channel. Checked it out. We did about 45 minutes. He's offering to train me to come on and do the Fight Pass Invitational. And I might just do it. I'm not sure my body can take it. I'm not sure my knees can take it. I'm not sure my back can take it. I'm not sure my eye can take it. I'm not sure if my mind can take it or my wife can take it. I'm not sure that you guys can take listening to me waffle on if I was to do it. But I think I'm going to fucking do it. I'm going to go change with Georgie Porgy, and we're going to do it. Anyway, there you go. First question, Brian. What do we have?
All right. So first question is from Dylan from Cork.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hello, Michael. Hello, Anthony. Hello, Brian. Hello, Harrington. Hope all you lads are doing well. My name is Dylan from Cork, and I have a question surrounding the future of International Fight Week. Last week was just absolutely sensational. You know, from the prelims to the main event, everything was just, you just couldn't take your eyes off of it. And like seeing the amount of international fans coming over to see their fighters compete on, you know, the biggest card of the year, essentially, was just, it never fails to amaze me how much the sport has grown since I would have first started watching it, you know, in the early 2000s to what it is now in the 2020s. And, you know, a lot of people this year, I even heard you say it, Mike, you know, they compared International Fight Week to what WrestleMania is to pro wrestling. And, you know, WrestleMania was an event that would have started in arenas such as Madison Square Garden, the Allstate Arena in Chicago, like so on and so forth. And now it's, you know, exclusively done in big stadiums. And it just got me thinking, like, do you think in the next few years we could see the UFC maybe try and put International Fight Week in the Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas? You know, with the way the sport is growing and the amount of international fighters that are becoming huge stars, I think more and more people are going to want to see them compete on the biggest stage in person. You know, I was looking at the capacity of the Allegiant Stadium, 65,000, and I'm sure they could expand that even more for the UFC just with the way the show would be structured. I think it could be an interesting way of, you know, trying to see how a stadium show would work for MMA. Like, as I say, we see it with WrestleMania, we see boxing do it all the time. And I just think for the UFC, I know they've done it in Australia and stuff, but for a North American stadium show, I think it could be a great way to try it out. Let me know what you think. Absolutely love the show, guys. Keep up the great work. Talk to you all later.
Ah, thank you very much. That was a great question. Well delivered, well thought out. Clearly an intelligent man. Yeah, and as he mentioned there at the end, we have had stadium shows. We've had two. We had one in Canada, I think it was, when George St. Pierre fought Jake Shields, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Was it Jake Shields? I think, yeah. Was it George St. Pierre and Jake Shields? There was about 60,000 people there. I just looked that up. And then obviously we had the one in Australia that he mentioned there, Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey. There was about, again, 65,000 people there.
Wasn't Whitaker versus Adesanya too in a stadium as well?
No, I don't know. No, I don't know. Maybe first I'm getting confused, maybe. But yeah, but still, yeah, no, I think it was, because I seem to remember the walkout of Izzy. But yeah, maybe it was Holly Holm. Maybe it wasn't, but I'm pretty sure Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, that was the stadium one. Massive, massive crowd. And Jake Shields, George St. Pierre. Yeah, I mean, look, listen, if they can do it in Canada, if they can do it in Australia, then they can without question do it in the States, right? There's the biggest fan base is here in America, and it's got a massive population, especially when you compare it to Canada and Australia. Right. You know what I mean? Their populations compared to the States are tiny. And it, of course, you know, in terms of star power, putting on fights, International Fight Week. I mean, last week was incredible, the last International Fight Week. But it's not quite as simple as that. I think there's a few, you know, things in the background, you know, like doing it in Las Vegas. I'm not sure. I don't know if you rent out the T-Mobile Arena. You know, maybe you have to make a commitment to them. You know, maybe they might be exclusive to them, or there's probably things like that. But in terms of just an actual question, would it be possible? Yeah, absolutely. Harrington, what are you looking up?
The GSP Stadium show in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. You're just looking. And what did you find?
I wasn't able to find anything.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just talking to you. I'm trying to have a conversation.
I'm listening to every word that you're saying.
You're trying to prove me wrong.
I'm not trying to prove you wrong. I'm trying to prove you right.
Well, Jake Shields versus George St. Pierre was in a motherfucking arena, okay?
It was at the Rogers Center in Toronto.
All right. Well, what was the there was a GSP one in a stadium somewhere. Trust me. Okay. There was about 50, 60,000 people there. Pretty sure it was Canada. Pretty sure it was. Yeah, I'll fucking look.
If I just talk to my man from Cork. Let me just say, I could listen to your accent all day long. That was exactly what my grandfather and grandmother sounded like. Love that. If I was going to see a stadium show in this hemisphere, I'd want to see Crow Park, baby. That's just me. But yeah, Allegiant Stadium obviously would be incredible. Who knows with the non-compete with the but I think for sizing purposes, a non-compete wouldn't necessarily apply. Like if we can hold an event that has more people than you can have, then that doesn't break any contracts. But I would. I would 100% love to see that. And I'd fly to Vegas for a fight at Allegiant Stadium for sure.
Okay. All right. Here are the top 10 highest attended UFC events to date. Here we go. Etihad Stadium will be configured for 70,000 fans, but won't be required to break the record. UFC 129, a bout between George St. Pierre and Jake Shields, drew 55,000 people to the Rogers Center. 55,000 people. So was I correct? Was I wrong?
You were correct. There was 55,000 people at the Rogers Center that night.
55,000 people sounds like a stadium. You know, it might not be technically a stadium, but it's still 55,000 bloody people. And then Rousey's Ronda Rousey. Oh no, that was at the Staples Center. But Ronda Rousey, number one, George St. Pierre. That's the biggest crowd to date, apparently. Really? Oh, this is probably it's got to be an old article. It's got to be an old article. But still, anyway, what else we got, Brian?
All right. So our next question is from Andrew Crichton.
Hi, all at BYM Podcast, Mike, Anthony, Harrington, Brian. How you doing? My question comes on the back of one of the most boring, tough seasons I've ever been. There's a lot of hype behind this with McGregor coming back and Michael Chandler. My question is, number one, what was your favourite ever tough season? And number two, what was your favourite prank? On the tough series, there's always a lot of pranks going. My favourite season was one of the bangers you were on, Michael Bisbin, season 14. Great season, lots of entertainment, lots of great talent in the fighters as well. TJ Dillashaw, Dodson, Diego Brandão, etc. And my favourite prank also came from that season when Akira Korasani shaved Brian Caraway's head in the middle of the night. And Brian Caraway chased him up the stairs, raging. Fucking hilarious. It was so good. So yeah, guys, what's your favourite season and your favourite prank that you can remember from any season? You all have a good one, guys. Thanks. From Scotland, I listen every week religiously. Cheers.
Cheers, mate. It sounds beautiful as you're walking through the Scottish countryside. You got the birds chirping and all the rest of it. Beautiful. Obviously I'm biased, but I'm going to say season three for me. That was my favourite because I was a part of it. And that was one of the most amazing experiences and life-changing and so many great memories. In terms of pranks, again, I've got to say the ones I was involved with, as you mentioned, though, season 14, Akira Korasana. Do you remember Akira Harrington?
I do not.
Right, Swedish guy, great guy. We still talk a bit on social media here and there. He's coaching a lot of good fighters these days. I just remember this. I saw a video of it recently. He had a sweaty jock strap. He walked out and it's on the camera. And someone distracts me, right? And Akira was like, oh, Mike, blah, 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 blah. And then someone runs up behind me and gets a sweaty jock strap, right? Like I'm talking dripping sweat, of ball sweat, and sticks it over my head or rubs it in my face or whatever, right? So obviously, you know, I fucking have to get revenge. I pick him up. I slam him on the floor. I grab the jock strap, fucking wrap it all around his face, stick it in his mouth, the little bastard. But in terms of pranks, it was on that same season because we had Tiki Gosen, who's an MMA manager and the coach. I used to train with him a lot. We used to be really close. And what's it? You know, we came up with some good ideas, but the one we did against Jason Miller, we've talked about this before, but we said, right, here's what we'll do. Because those walls on the Ultimate Fighter gyms, they're very – very thin. I said, right, what we'll do is two through that wall, two through this wall, because our changing room and their changing room are adjacent. So we just stick a sledgehammer through two walls, right? And we stick two sledgehammers through the other wall. So we make four holes and then we just send in, we put in through the walls four fire extinguishers, right? and we did this, smashed them all open, and kicked the door open as well. Fire extinguishers galore, and then send in a mariachi band, okay? And we legit hired a mariachi. We were walking through a Las Vegas casino, and there was a mariachi band all dressed up in, like, their outfits and whatnot, and they just performed or whatever. And we went, whoa, hold on a minute. And we said, can we get a card? And we got the card, so we hired the mariachi band, so we fucking did them in with the fire extinguishers. Then we sent in the mariachi band. If you can find that footage, Brian, it's anytime I was dying. I was dying. And those fighters, I mean, they weren't happy. They were like, man, I got a fight in 2 weeks. This could really fuck up my lungs and all the rest of it. And the more they were bitching about it, and they probably had a point, but whatever. It was funny. It was so funny. And then there's the bizarreness of the mariachi band going in and all the smoke everywhere. Mate, it was crazy. And then we had a lot of fun with the pranks because Jason Mayhem Miller, what did he do? He filled our room with some tires. And we're like, oh, you want to mess with tires? So what we did, we had his car. We had all the wheels taken off his car and left on bricks outside. And then what Tiki wanted to do, and because we have high rental cars, here's what Tiki wanted to do. And they were going to do it as well. Because these rental cars, for the sake of TV, they're like 20 grand a pop, which is a waste of money, right? But still, you know, it makes for good TV. They were going to lift up Jason Mayhem's car on a crane, right? And then when he walked out, let go of it, and it just smashed into the ground. That was what we put forward to the production crew. Do you know what I mean? And it was being considered. And after a while, because of health and safety reasons, they were like, no, oh, here we go. Here we go. Here's the season. Look at this. Oh, it was so funny. Where's the mariachi man? Give us some sound, Brian.
I can't breathe.
Where's the mariachi man? Whatever. It's a good little clip all the same. Give you an idea.
How mad was Dana that you destroyed his locker room?
Oh, they don't give a shit. They don't give a shit. Do you know what I mean? Those walls are designed for smashing. We've all seen Rampage ripping the doors off and all the rest of it. They expect it. I think they expect it. So, yeah, there we go. Brian, we've got one more question.
We did have one more question, but you answered it right before we went to questions. This gentleman here, his name is Joseph. He's just asking if you're going to do the grapple invitational.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see about that. We'll see about it. I mean, I'm up for it. I would love to do it. It will give me something to train for. I've always had, you know, I can grapple. I can. And
who's the dream opponent?
George St. Pierre, when I was talking to him, he was saying that I should ask to grapple Anderson Silva. And that might be fun. Yeah, that might be fun. I don't know if Anderson would be up for that. I know he's still training. I know he's still competing in striking, boxing, getting beaten off Jake Paul. That's another thing. But yeah, Anderson Silva. But still, guys, I'm going to jump on a plane. We're going to call this one a day. Thank you very much, Harrington. Anthony should be back on Thursday. Until then, wherever you are in the world, thank you for watching. Take care. All the best. See you soon.